Ashland LLC versus Virginia American Water Company. Gibson S. Wright, Appellant's Counsel. Julie S. Palmer, Appellee's Counsel.
Good morning.
Good morning.
May it please the Court. I'm Gibson Wright of McCandlish Holton in Richmond. I represent the appellant Ashland LLC. Ashland has a chemical manufacturing plant in the city of Hopewell. It sued Virginia American Water Company, which operates the Hopewell Water Plant, for breach of its contractual duty as supplied by the applicable tariff approved by the State Corporation Commission to use reasonable care and diligence to avoid interruptions in service during a three-day water outage in Hopewell in 2018. The outage greatly damaged Ashland by halting its chemical manufacturing. Virginia American demurred on the merits, and at that hearing, the Hopewell Circuit Court sua sponte raised the issue of subject matter jurisdiction and then later found that it lacked subject matter jurisdiction and dismissed the matter. Ashland's appealed, and there are two assignments of error that I'll address in turn unless the Court directs me otherwise. The first is the issue of the lack of jurisdiction. I think it's pretty straightforward that Ashland's claim is a breach of contract claim over $100.
SEC tariffs clearly have some contractual components, but they're also not traditional contracts in a bargain for exchange sense. And the constitutional provision limiting trial courts from enjoining, annulling, reversing, reviewing a decision of the State Corporation Commission comes into play at some point when we're dealing with a tariff. And I guess my question is, where do you draw the line? When does the contract action violate Article 9, Section 4?
When the trial court applying a term of the tariff, a contract term, would necessarily have to review and then reverse or annul that particular provision of the tariff, such as in the Little Bay case that was cited in the briefing, where a developer was looking to get credits from a VEPCO for installing electric heat, and then there subsequently was an order of the SEC saying we're disallowing those sorts of benefits. And when the developer sued for those benefits, this court found that the trial court necessarily would have to reverse that order because the State Corporation Commission subsequently said you can't do that. Now, I think it's interesting, too, on the jurisdictional question, they said, look, the developer could go to the SEC and petition them and say, you need to fix this, you need to allow these credits again. And then also, I think it's important, too, that the court in Little Bay said, and once you do that, you go right back to trial court. You don't go to the SEC for your general breach of contract claim.
So review, from your perspective, is not, I reviewed the paper this morning, you know, I read it, it's not even reading it and interpreting it, it's judicial review, exercising judicial review, which is a term of art, and it means putting the court in a position of deciding whether or not the Constitution permits this or statutes permit this or something else.
Yes, Your Honor, and I agree, and I think it's also worth noting that Virginia American, in their demur on the merits, they asked the court to take judicial review of the entire tariff because they wanted to grab onto other provisions of the tariff that they thought barred our claim, there are certain defenses to liability. And so for those reasons, I think that because we did not ask the City of Hopewell Circuit Court to reverse any part of that tariff, there's a specific provision, 19C, that says that they have to exercise, you know, do reasonable care and diligence in avoiding interruptions like this interruption that happened in Hopewell in 2018 for 3 days.
Does review include interpret? I think that's where the circuit court judge was saying, I have to interpret this tariff. Does review include?
Yes, you would interpret, and in applying it, what did they mean to say? I think as long as you don't find yourself in a position where he's going to have to award some relief that's in direct contravention or otherwise has to take out a term of the tariff by effectively annulling it, then you can interpret it.
But it's not review and reverse, correct, or null. It's not review, interpret it, and take some other action. It's review as a standalone.
Well, and I would just direct the court first to the language itself of Article 9, Section 4 of the Constitution. The title is Appeals from Actions of the Commission. And the first paragraph says the Commonwealth or any agreed party can appeal a final order there shall have right of an appeal to the Supreme Court of any final finding, order, or judgment of the commission. And so clearly that's appellate review when you're saying, I don't like what they did here. Can you address it and change it? And the second paragraph of that two-paragraph section, the one that includes the word review, it's an issue here. It says, no other court of the Commonwealth shall have jurisdiction to review, reverse, correct, or annul any action of the commission, or to enjoin or restrain it in the performance of its official duties. So that's clarifying the first, where it's saying that you can appeal to the Supreme Court, but you can't go anywhere else. And I asked the court, too, I think in my reply brief, I noted particularly, I cited the sections, in Little Bay Corps, it says, I believe, six times, when they talk about review, they use it in conjunction with and leading to the reversal and annulment. There's a connection between review and, in this context, it's appellate review. It's review that require you to annul or otherwise not
effectuate.
It's
not so much appellate review, it's court review, which is judicial review, which means judicial review. When we write an opinion, we interpret a statute, we don't say we're exercising review over the statute. We say we read the statute, we interpret the statute.
Yes.
But judicial review is, I've read the statute and I think it violates the Constitution.
Yeah. Or it's no more sense that the court, in taking notice of a statute, is taking away the prerogative of the General Assembly and its legislative function and saying this is what they meant by this section of the code, just as
can
the...
I change the subject for a second?
Yes.
There are literally dozens, as best I can tell, I mean literally dozens, of regulatory agencies in the United States, federal and state, that regulate everything from ships to nuclear power plants to cable companies to truckers to railroads to taxi cabs, ICC, the FCC, FERC. The CFR is full of tariffs. Is there any court that you have found that says that a court cannot enforce, and I'll ask exactly the same question to you, ma'am, in just a minute, cannot enforce a contractual relationship between a customer and the regulated entity on a tariff provision which constitutes an implied in law contract provision between the two of them? In other words, is their conclusion consistent with anything, any other interpretation of the relationship of private parties when one of them is governed by a tariff?
I haven't found anything, and I think on the flip side of that, in terms of the Kroger v. Appalachian Power Co. case, that's also a Supreme Court case, and that's the case where you get the quote that the tariff provides the contractual terms of the relationship. They, of course, on a plea and bar as to whether certain tariff defenses barred liability of Appalachian Power Company. There was some damage about the power coming into the Kroger store, I believe. And, of course, in taking evidence, they had to apply those tariff terms in the contract, and they concluded that liability was barred. But I think it's the opposite of the finding that you're looking for, Your Honor, and I couldn't find it. And I wasn't particular. I mean, honestly, our position is it's the opposite of that, but I haven't seen it.
Does the SEC anywhere in its public statement subject to judicial review say anything about whether or not they want to start hearing damage claims on in their capacity as the constitutional entity here?
Well, it's not quite official, I don't necessarily think it's not quite tongue-in-cheek, but as we cited it in the record, I mean, the SEC's website, we cited it, we put it in the record in trial court, directs folks to the general court, the regular court system for damage claims. And I think on a bigger point, with the Appalachian Power Co. v. John Stewart Walker, Inc. case, which is under the old 1902 Constitution, that case explains in detail where these sorts of common law breach of contract claims are not meant for the SEC. The SEC is a unique institution that has certain legislative, judicial, and executive powers, but when it comes to a standard breach of contract common law claim, you go to the regular court system for that. And I think Little Bay, which is under the 1971 Constitution, it cites Appalachian for that prospect in support of that. So this is, you know, precisely the sort of claim that is meant for trial court. And I think, too, just effectively, that besides the constitutional issue, the trial court also cited three separate sections of Title 56 to argue that there is a, I think the trial court used proclivity, saying that the General Assembly showed a proclivity that the SEC should deal with these things. None of those remedies apply here. You have 56-6, that allows you to petition the SEC for injunctive relief. We're seeking money damages. 256-262, that allows cities like Hopewell to petition the SEC about certain violations, essentially make a consumer complaint as a city. And then, of course, the court cited 56-247.1A3, and that just talks about customer complaint procedures. I mean, none of these remedies are, suing for breach of contract, which we've done.
Let me ask you this question. Assuming that you were to survive and go back down and survive demur and do all that, would you only be entitled to direct contract damages? This is the first time since I've left law school I've read a case that I thought was on all fours with Hadley versus Baxendale.
Well, Your Honor, I will say that on the demur, the question as to whether we had a claim was on the issue of the defense of these tariff provisions. I haven't quite briefed the issue of what damages are reasonably contemplated by the parties. Now, of course, as we pled, Ashland was an industrial customer that spends thousands of dollars on water. And as I believe is pled in the complaint, that it was reasonably understood that these damages could result from Virginia American's failure to use to follow its duty under 19C of the tariff to use reasonable care to avoid interruptions like this one.
The full argument regarding the demur, both sides, was never really addressed in the trial court because of the jurisdictional ruling, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
So while we could reach it, we don't have the fully developed argument record.
We do not. It's our position. I think it's clear that we've pled a duty and a breach and damages in our complaint, and for that reason, I'd ask the court to A, rule that the trial court has jurisdiction, but then B, also remand it with instruction to overrule demur and then have proceed for further adjudication of the claim on the merits.
That's a pretty aggressive appellate remedy when the trial court hadn't even touched the subject because of lack of jurisdiction.
Well, Your Honor, it may be, but I mean, I would say I think we've pled it.
Can I turn your attention to Code 56-7?
Yes. And of course, we can't miss the forest for the trees here with the trial court. It cited all these other these three other remedies that were in there, it forgot that 56-7 expressly says that none of those remedies, quote, in any way abridge or alter existing remedies of common law. And so for that reason, again, I think that there's no statutory or constitutional law that bars the court from having jurisdiction. And then on the second assignment of error, I think it's clear that we pled a breach of contract claim. I understand that it wasn't quite addressed at the trial court, but I think that for the reasons stated in the briefs, these three separate tariff provisions that they've cited, Rule 8F, 17A, and 19A, they're inapplicable here. The first, Rule 8F, deals with fire service connections. It's not applicable here. 17A says there's no guarantee. Ashland's not suing for breach of a guarantee. It's suing for a failure of their negligence, essentially, for their failure to use reasonable care and diligence in order to prevent and avoid interruptions. And, I think that's ultimately here, and going to the policy arguments they make, that's ultimately here what's at issue. There's a balance that the SEC has determined in making this tariff that we can't guarantee any loss of service, but at the same time, we've got this duty to use reasonable care and diligence in order to prevent and avoid interruptions. It's a contractual duty that we've pled that they've breached, and it's resulted in damages. And for that reason, I believe that Ashland's pled a breach of contract claim. And if I could, I'd reserve, unless there are any further questions, I'd like to reserve our remaining time for rebuttal.
All righty. Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court, I'm Julie Palmer, and I represent the Appalachian Virginia American Water. The trial court properly dismissed Ashland's complaint for lack of subject matter jurisdiction based on Article 9, Section 4 of the Constitution, the pertinent provision of which is the second paragraph, which clearly provides that no court other than this court in the Commonwealth shall have jurisdiction to review, reverse, correct, or annul any action of the SEC.
But the subject of the sentence is a court. The verb is review. Aren't they obviously talking about judicial review as opposed to review in the newspaper this morning?
I would agree, and I believe what Ashland asked the trial court to do was to engage in judicial review of the tariff by reviewing the provisions.
We would never say that. The expression judicial review is to place the court in a position to create a hierarchy of laws and determine that the subordinate laws give away to the higher laws, usually the Constitution. But when we interpret a statute and apply it to a case, we don't say we've exercised judicial review. We say we read it, and then we interpreted it.
Well, in that case, then, judicial review means the same as the plain language of review, which, according to Black's Law Dictionary, is to consider, inspect, or re-examine a subject or thing.
Well, let me ask you a question about that. Because you concede, on brief, that there are certain relationships created by the tariff that do give rise to contractual actions in the circuit court, specifically when a utility covered by a tariff sues the customer for non-payment of the bill. That necessarily requires any court adjudicating that non-payment of the bill to look at the tariff to see if the money is actually owed. So review can't mean simply read or enforce, can it?
I disagree in that in those cases, the Massaponic Sand case and the Chesapeake and Potomac versus Bless case, the court was not having to review and interpret the tariff provisions in order to rule on that case. The court was looking at the statute.
Review can't mean read because they did have to read, well, you owe X dollars per gallon.
Correct. It means something more than read. I acknowledge that, and I believe that the Black's Law Dictionary definition includes that. Consideration, inspection, or reexamination of a subject or thing. So if the trial court is being...
Let me ask you this hypothetical.
Yes.
Customer doesn't pay his bill. Utility files action to recover what they're owed under the bill. Customer defends by citing some non-math provision of the tariff. You seem to basically say, if it's just math, it's okay. Says, I have a defense under paragraph 27 of the tariff, and let's say it's facially ridiculous. But is it your position that the trial court would have to dismiss the action under the bill because that would require it to review some non-math portion of the tariff? It seems to me that can't be right. But it seems to me that's where your argument leads.
I believe that is. I mean, that is our argument. The trial court has to make a determination as to what it is being asked to do. And if what it is being asked to do
But you
involves,
can read it. You just can't say to yourself, hey, here's what it says.
You can't. The trial court, under Article 9, Section 4, is not permitted to take any action that would review, reverse, correct, or annul any action.
So your understanding of review is I can read it, like I did the paper this morning, but I can't look up and say, here's what I think this says, because that's going too far.
And that's not just my view, Your Honor. That is what this court adopted in the Little Bay case, and it's what this court...
Well, why did we remand it for the case to go on to a common law remedy later?
In the Little Bay case, the circuit court found it had no jurisdiction because, in order to grant the relief, because of Article 9, Section 4.
No, there was a SEC order that said, don't do this. That's obviously putting... Judicial review is putting a court over somebody in a hierarchy, right? Because we always use it in the constitutional context. So if the SEC issues an order and the seven of us put ourselves over top of the SEC, and we're going to tell you, we see your order, but we disagree with it. We're not going to let you do that. That's judicial review. Constitution may require it. Treaty may require it. A federal statute on supremacy may require it. But I don't see how any of this has anything to do with reading it and then looking up at you and say, here's what this thing says, as far as we can tell.
Well, it's because the constitutional provision, first of all, doesn't include the word judicial. It says review. And it also talks about any action of the commission. It's not limited to an order of the commission, although a tariff, as this court recognized in the Kroger versus APCO decision, is issued pursuant to an order of the SEC. So
in
Ashland...
Let me ask you this, then. There are FERC tariffs. There are FCC tariffs. There are ICC tariffs. There are literally dozens of regulated entities, industries, that have tariffs required by federal and state and sometimes municipal law with taxicabs. Has any court ever said that it's a violation of some constitutional provision or a violation of anything that any court said that you cannot interpret? You can't read the tariff provision, which is part of the contract between the private parties, and interpret it and apply it and issue a common law remedy?
Other than Article 9, Section 4 of the Virginia Constitution, no.
Well,
did you have a chance to consult Professor Howard's treatise?
I have not, Your Honor.
My recollection is what, not that we're bound by that, but he takes a historical approach to this, and his point is the SEC are like judges. And so to have a circuit court essentially act as a court of appellate review is inconsistent with a constitutional scheme. And so that is why essentially an appeal to whatever the SEC has done has to go to the Supreme Court. But this is different. This is interpreting the contract or the tariff. And there's case law from this court that suggests that that is not problematic.
Well, the language of the constitutional provision says what it says, and it prohibits any court other than this one from reviewing, reversing, correcting, or annulling any action of the SEC.
And I would understand your argument in that regard if you didn't concede that there could be a suit over the bill, because that definitionally is going to require me to read and interpret the tariff. You know, they owe $1 a gallon for the first 1,000 gallons, and then for the next 1,000 gallons, it's 50 cents, and here's the number of gallons. And you seem to concede that there's some sort of math exception to review, but I don't see how we get there based on the plain language review. I have to read it and say this is what it means to determine what the bill is.
And to be clear, my quote-unquote concession in that regard was based on the cases of this court, which I believe are distinguishable from the current situation. So I'm not conceding that any math question or non-math question is taken out of the confines of the constitutional provision.
I'll dial it back from concession to say our prior decisions say that's okay. And so doesn't review have to mean something other than read, or we're wrong in those cases?
I don't think so, because when you look at the context of those cases, first of all, the Little Bay versus VEBCO case, as this court pointed out, it's the John Stuart Walker case, where the court did find that it had jurisdiction, and this court affirmed. But this court in Little Bay recognized that in the Walker case, first of all, not only was it the previous version of the constitutional language that was at issue, but also the parties in that case conceded the validity of the SEC order. So the court was not required to review that order and interpret it. It was only required to apply its terms to the situation at hand. That's
well,
also
no debate here about the invalidity of the tariff provision and contest.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
There's no debate in this case over the validity or the invalidity of any tariff provision.
Not validity, but there's a debate about what it means as applied to the facts of this case, which was not the case in the APCO provision.
In Code 56-7, the General Assembly, as I understand it, tell me if you disagree, says, look, we've written a lot of statutes on the SEC, and nothing in what we say has anything to do with common law remedies. They can go to the common law courts and get common law remedies. Why would they say that if the answer is, well, thanks, but I can't go to the common law remedies because the Constitution doesn't allow it?
Well, what they say is existing remedies, so my position would be that the Constitution makes some of those remedies in certain cases not applicable, not there, as is the case, in other words, in any case in which the circuit court would have to review, reverse, correct, or annul an action of the SEC, that common law remedy does not exist. And the reason it doesn't exist...
What common law remedy does?
There is no remedy here for monetary damages.
So 56-7... was the General Assembly misunderstanding the Virginia Constitution? Because why would you write that if the answer is, well, actually, you don't even have the power to do it?
Because I think their insertion of the word existing is their acknowledgement that in some cases seeking monetary damages under these circumstances, there is not a remedy. And the reason there's not a remedy is because of the policy decisions that go into the formation of these tariffs.
What common law remedies existed when they passed 56-7 that survive? Is there anything?
There are remedies in any case between a customer and a utility that does not require the trial court to review, correct, reverse, or annul an action of the SEC.
Give me an example that doesn't require in a common law action based on the tariff between a customer and a utility that the trial court in resolving the case would not have to actually read the tariff.
Well, I'm not saying that review is the same as read. So in my view, cases that meet that hypothetical are the three cases that are Chesapeake and Potomac Telephone Company of Virginia versus Bless, Massaponic Sand and Gravel versus VEPCO, and the Little Bay case. All of which, Little Bay case, they conceded the validity of the order. The other two, yes, the tariff was part of the case in that they applied to the rates and the terms of the provision, but the court didn't have to reexamine what the SEC did in making that tariff language in order to decide the case. In those cases, it was, could the utility and the customer do something outside of the tariff relationship in order to change the tariff relationship? And the court said, no, the tariff is clear. It says that there are, the rates have to be applied equally to all customers, and so you can't go outside of that contract and make an oral agreement that would
So they interpreted the tariff.
No, they addressed the validity of the agreement outside of the tariff. And that's why, in those cases, there was jurisdiction for the circuit court to hear the case, whereas in our case, there is not. Because what Ashland is asking was asking the circuit court to do was to not only read, but review and take action on the meaning of the SEC's tariff.
I don't object in any way to you defending the win that you have below. But if it was so clear, why did you not only not assert it initially below, but actually say, we want to make clear, we're not saying this?
We were enlightened by the trial court, Your Honor.
Fair enough.
But I will say our point below, and maybe it was inartfully stated, but our point on the demur, and it's a critical one also on the jurisdictional issue, is neither side has found any Virginia Circuit Court or appellate court decision involving this type of situation where a customer affected by an outage of water can come and sue for contractual money damages in any circuit court. There is no precedent that either side could find. And the reason for that, we
about
submit...
56-7, common law remedies. Nothing we say in any of these statutes keep them from having their common law remedies. So they say, I have a contract, it was breached, and I have damages. Common law remedy.
But there are no such reported cases, and that's because in order to do so, under the facts asserted by Ashland, the circuit court would have had to run afoul of Article 9, Section 4 of the Constitution.
We agree it would not have had to annul or enjoin or do any of those things. The operative word is review. The case rises and falls on what review means.
I don't agree the case rises and falls on that. I believe review is the most appropriate action that fits the context here, but I do think that the trial court, in engaging in a review of the tariff, had it come to an interpretation that was contrary to what the SEC intended, the SEC was on the other side of this tariff contract, then in applying it in the incorrect way, it could be reversing what the SEC contended or intended, and it could be annulling what the SEC intended.
That's
so
true.
I don't think we have to get there.
That
but
would
I
be
think
Little Bay, where there's an order. The SEC has interpreted. We say this is what it means. And the court wouldn't be in a position to say, well, too bad. We say it means something different. That makes a lot of sense.
But that didn't come up in Little Bay because the parties conceded the validity of the order. So Little Bay involved a question. The fact or the dispute that the trial court was asked to rule upon was not an interpretation of the tariff in Little Bay or Bless or Massaponic Sand.
Going back to Justice Kelsey's question, in this case, neither party argues that the tariff is invalid. Everybody just... It's just an argument over what it means. No one's saying that the SEC exceeded its authority. No one's saying that the SEC misapplied a legal standard. No one's saying that the SEC didn't have sufficient evidence in front of it. No one is challenging what the SEC did. It's just an argument about what the SEC did that everybody accepts as valid means. Correct?
Correct. But in asking the court to take a position on what the SEC meant, Ashland was asking the trial court to review and potentially, depending on the trial court's ruling, reverse, correct, or annul what the SEC intended to happen in applying that tariff. And that's what runs afoul of Article 9, Section 4.
One last question. If we say the SEC's got to have a trial court status to have all these contract claims, what about the right to a jury under the Seventh Amendment of the U.S. Constitution?
And to be clear, we're not advocating that the SEC would now hear contractual damage claims. There is no contractual remedy under these circumstances. And the reason for that is the Balancing Act that results in the rates that the SEC applies to the utilities that all customers get to take the advantage of. And in exchange for that, you give up your right to sue for money damages when there's an outage under the language of this tariff. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you, counsel. Rebuttal?
Yes. Thank you. Just three brief points. Again, on the argument that, for example, in Little Bay, they had to go around an order. They didn't have to apply it. I mean, I think it's clear in the Chesapeake and Potomac case where they applied the statutory rates for telephone service. That was an action order of the SEC that they specifically had to recognize for undercharges. And then again, as I mentioned earlier, the Kroger case where they had to, at a plea and bar hearing, take evidence and find out whether the applicable terms of the tariff barred a claim. Again, those are direct issues of a trial court applying the tariff. It's not avoiding it. It's taking it head on. I guess to Justice McCullough's point on the history of the SEC, and I regret that this was not in the briefing, but I would just note that in researching for arguments today, looking at the Appalachian Power Co. v. Walker, John Stuart Walker case, that was under the old Constitution. If you go to the old Constitution, 1902 Constitution, it's Section 156D. That, too, has the provision saying no court of this Commonwealth except the Supreme Court of Appeals by way of appeals, as herein authorized, shall have jurisdiction to review, reverse, correct, or annul any action of this commission within the scope of its authority, or to suspend or delay the execution or operation thereof. Again, it's history showing that when you have these other cases where they're applying rate charges, et cetera, the trial court could look at it and apply it, just couldn't reverse it. And so for that reason, I respectfully request that the court find that the trial court did have jurisdiction to hear our claim, and furthermore, that we've pled a contract claim. I appreciate your time.
Thank you very much, counsel. This court is adjourned.